Welcome in to the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas, joined in the studio today by Shaq Hislop, Don Hutchison and Stevie Nicol with us as well. We also welcome to the programme Jurgen Klinsmann and Gab Marcotti. What a day it has been. Of course, all the focus very much on that incident in Copenhagen that saw Christian Eriksen collapse just before half-time. The front page of the Danish newspaper Ekstra Bladet sums up quite nicely. Denmark lose, life wins. It looked for quite a long time that that second statement might not be valid as Christian Eriksen fought for his life on the pitch in front of the world of football. This is how the trainer, Morten Boesen, saw it.
I haven't talked with Christian's family in Christian with detail, so I'm not going to say anything in detail right now. But I want to say what we've seen and what have been seen on the screen. We were called on the pitch when Christian fell down. I didn't see it myself, but it was pretty clear that he was unconscious. When I get to him, he's on his side. He is breathing and I can feel his pulse, but suddenly that changes. And if, as everyone saw, we started giving him CPR. The help came really, really fast from the medical team and the rest of the staff. And with their cooperation, we did what we had to do. And we managed to get Christian back. He speaks to me before he is taken to the hospital to more analysis.
Morten Boesen then speaking through a translator. Even hear it again, even though we saw it all happen, it is still, the whole scene was just quite unbelievable, Shaq.
It's surreal. And I think my own emotions kind of summed up those of everybody involved in this game, not just those on the field. That this is the worst scenario you could hope for in watching football. You fear the worst. That's your natural instinct. And then eventually when the news comes that at least he's alive, you have a sense of euphoria about you in recognizing what that means. What that means to Christian Eriksen. What that means to the game of football. Hearing the trainer talk, and in his words, as per the interpreter, we managed to get Christian back.
Yeah.
That speaks volumes to exactly how serious the situation was, exactly how close we were to having a very different discussion around what happened. And it puts so much of a game that we love, a game that we've all played and continue to watch, it puts so much of it into context. We talk about the emotion of the game, the value of results, and the highs of winning and the lows of losing. And this somehow, in a moment, made all of that completely irrelevant. And we all celebrate the outcome. Never mind the result of the football game.
Yeah.
We all celebrate the outcome that Christian Eriksen, whether you know him or not, whether you're a Dane or not, whether you're an Inter Milan fan or not, we all celebrate the fact that he's alive.
Yeah.
And at least communicating with those around him.
Not just from a sporting point of view, just from a life point of view, that you're watching a fellow human being literally on the edge. And you would just sit there. I was with my wife and you're watching it and you're just thinking, what is his family thinking? How are they coping with this?
Dan, I was in bits watching it. I really was. I was really emotional watching it. And everything's unfolding right in front of your eyes. And you think of his immediate family. You think of his girlfriend, his two kids. The emotion on all of the fans inside of the stadium, the Danes and the Finland supporters, was incredible. It was very touching what his teammates done to him to try and protect him as well, which was a great image. The medics that were getting on the pitch to try and save his life as quick as possible, they done a fantastic job. And then, as Shaka said, the natural thing inside of you when it's unfolded in front of your eyes, you're fearful for the outcome.
Mm-hmm.
And you're so scared of the outcome, it makes you really emotional. And then to hear the sort of good news afterwards sort of makes you a little bit joyous and it makes you smile. And you can see the players, you know, I felt for them coming back onto the pitch, trying to play the game. But it was just really heartbreaking and raw and brutal to try and watch. It was incredible, really.
One sight that was certainly staggering, Stevie, and the initiative that his teammates took very quickly was to build that kind of barrier around him, which is something that I think will live for a long time with all of us.
Yeah, no question. I think I think the thing that stuck out was the fact that they actually, to a man pretty much, were facing the other way because they just couldn't look at it.
Yeah.
And it was actually hard to look at it yourself.
Yeah.
You see what's happening and you don't want to look at it and you look away, but then you want to see a sign, you want to see a spark of life in the player himself. But as you said before, the way the players handled it, yes, they were crying, yes, they were upset.
Yeah.
But I tell you, whoever made the decision to just go around them, what a great decision.
Jürgen, it was one of those moments as a spectator where time almost stopped. Everything was happening in slow motion.
Yeah, I think the whole football world, not only the football people, were completely under shock. And we all started praying. And we started praying and you kind of set your priorities differently within a split second. You know, and priority number one was only about his life. Get him back. And let's pray. And obviously, when then the positive news came a little bit later, it was a huge, huge relief for all of us, you know. And I can only imagine what went through the mind of the players, of the coaching staff, of the fans in the stadium. Everybody was part of this tragedy for a couple of hours. So thanks God. No, thanks God he's back. He's with us. He's in stable conditions. And everything seems to be okay. And obviously, then the game being played becomes kind of secondary. It's not that important. Obviously, they lost the game 1-0. Now you can discuss up and down. Was it right? Was it wrong? Obviously, the players cannot be in a perfect mindset. That's impossible. You know, the game ended up with a penalty and a penalty missed and a mistake by Kasper Schmeichel that he hasn't done in the whole season with Leicester City. So it shows you that the nerves were right there. But I think they don't mind. You know, they don't mind. You know, they got the game out of the way. At the end of the day, it was, in partnership with UEFA, they asked both teams if they want to play that game. I think that's actually a huge sign by UEFA, kind of discussing it with the two federations. I think that shows character, actually. Was it now right or wrong? Leave that apart. Yeah, what a day it was. And thanks God we have Christian with us.
Gab, let's talk about that decision for it to go through today, to kick off today. UEFA, I understand, gave them two options. Is that right?
Natural contingency. We've seen it before used in the Champions League and other situations where you cannot continue playing a match, whether it's the floodlights going out or it could be weather conditions, anything like that, crowd trouble, where the match is generally played the following day, usually earlier in the day. In this case, I have to say, I assume that would be the road that they would go down, but I think to their credit, they put it to the two FAs, who then put it to their players. And Kasper Hjulmand, the Denmark manager, came out and he said that the players wanted to play. The players, you know, they recognized that they wouldn't be in the right mindset, but that they wouldn't have been in the right mindset tomorrow either. You know, something like this, you know, it's not something that you get over from one day to the next. And so the players' preference, once they knew that Eriksen was out of danger, was to go ahead and as he put it, you know, get the rest of the game out of the way.
Yeah, let's get more on that, as Gab alluded to. This is what Kasper Hjulmand, the Denmark coach, had to say about that decision.
Jeg vil gerne lige spørge til...
A very, very sad night. We were all affected by it. I want to ask about the process when you waited and the crisis meeting. Did you feel any pressure from UEFA in terms of playing the game, or was it something the players wished for? No, there is no pressure from UEFA about doing it tonight. We knew that we had two options. Finland is playing on the 16th and we're playing on the 17th. If they played on the 17th, we could have played it a day later, but it was either tonight or tomorrow at 12 p.m. The players couldn't imagine
og så skulle møde op i morgen,
not being able to sleep tonight.
Og spille kampen. Det var mere uoverskueligt.
And then at gå ind have to get in tomorrow, get in the bus and play a game.
Og få det overstået.
It was easier to go in now than do that. And honestly, it was best to get it over with.
Det valg, som tiden gik med. Det
valg, and you know, just
valgte,
get it over with. And that's we spent the time trying to decide what to do.
Going into a game and just get it over with, I think kind of summed up everything from the second half. You can just see the D's of the Danish players coming out to restart the game. Clearly not focused. The error here from Schmeichel, Shaq.
Yeah, and it's uncharacteristic from Kasper Schmeichel. But on the circumstance, you do sympathise. Not just with Kasper Schmeichel, but the entire Danish squad and what they were dealing with, what they felt they had already been through.
Josef Poulsen would then win a penalty with 18 minutes to go.
Just a little knock on his ankle, wasn't it, from behind from the defender. Looked a bit soft, but it was. But this was a poor penalty from Højbjerg. Not sure why he was the designated penalty taker. It's not really his forte. It's a weak penalty. Comfortable save from the goalkeeper.
Yeah, so it finishes then. Finland 1, Denmark 0. Let's hear more now, shall we, from Kasper Holmen.
I was saying, you could see a different kind of energy from the players, and that is understandable, but can you tell us what kind of change you saw on your team? Honestly, there were players out there who were completely done, emotionally done, and emotionally exhausted. The majority said that they couldn't play, that it was impossible to finish this. They were hugging each other. Well, you know, it is a traumatic experience, and
let's prøve at gå ud og gøre hvad vi kan.
The attitude was, let's go out and try do what we can, and then we talked about allowing having all these feelings, and it was okay to say no if they weren't able to play. Some of them said that they wanted to try, and I said no matter what feelings they had, it was all okay. You have to allow yourself to try and play the game if you feel like it, and you have to dare to show happy emotions. But it was okay to say no, and because some of them they weren't able to play, and some of them were ready. So we just basically tried to do our best. You can't play a football game at this level it's not normal to play such a game and then see one of your friends suffer with a heart issue.
Kasper Holmen then obviously speaking there through a translator. Would you want it to play?
I'm not sure. And first of all, let me say this. There is no ideal response to the situation from UEFA or anybody else. Personally, I think what UEFA should have done is taken the situation into their hands, have both teams go back to their hotels, send therapists to each hotel to deal with the players as a group and individually as needed, and then see when the game needed to be played. From a playing perspective, as I mentioned before, you go from what has to be the lowest possible low that you can experience during a game of football. Mm. And then you are hit with what feels like the highest of highs in knowing that Christian Eriksen is conscious, that he's alive. And your initial instinct is, let's play this game. Because of that high, let's get it out the way. We're in Denmark, we can go back and spend the rest of the night, spend tomorrow with our own families, our own loved ones. That feels like the right response right then. But you've been through these incredibly traumatic lows and highs. I don't think, from a human perspective, it's the best place for you to be making that that decision, which is why, I feel that UEFA should have taken control of this situation. But I'll finish as I started. There is no right, absolutely right response to this. You just have to do what feels best in this situation.
We heard Christian Fuchs on our broadcast earlier today, knows Kasper Schmeichel extraordinarily well, obviously, their time at Leicester, saying you just had to look at him and he was clearly not right.
I thought the coach was absolutely spot on what he was saying. You could see the emotion in the coach's eyes and his voice. And I concur with Shaka. There's no right or wrong in this scenario. The only thing I would say is that as a counter sort of argument or a bit of balance to that is if you do play the next game, and I was in Dortmund in 2017 when there was an explosion on the bus, and UEFA decided to play the game the next day, the Dortmund players then travelling back in on the same sort of coach, on the same journey, they were gone the next night. So I think, in my humble opinion, I think what the coach has probably seen in the players' eyes, asking them the question, there might have been a response from Christian. He might have tried to inspire the players to go out and, in the second half and try and play the game. But there's no right or wrong. I just think if you ask the team to try and sleep on it with all the emotion and you're overthinking it, to then try and turn up tomorrow, the next day, it's just impossible. The coach can only go by what he sees in the dressing room.
I don't understand how anybody could possibly think that you ask the people who have been through such a traumatic experience what's the right thing to do.
Right.
I mean, that's completely wrong. How are they supposed to know? Their brain's all over the place. Mm-hmm. Emotionally, you've got to make a really tough decision when emotionally you're just not there. You're away somewhere else. It should not, absolutely should not, have been put on the players or the coaches. I kind of slightly disagree with Don. I think the incident he's talking about is completely different. I think had they gone back to the hotel and spoken to Eriksen again and heard how well he is and then calmed down and then re-energise to go and play the rest of the game the following day, I absolutely think that is the right thing to do.
Right.
But to actually turn round and ask the players and the coach and the staff to make the decision was definitely the wrong one.
Can I just add one thing here, Dan? Sorry, just a little off topic on this. I don't think enough is being made of the medical staff and their response here. Listen, I'm no doctor myself. I do know doctors, and there is nothing more difficult, by my understanding, for them in dealing with these situations in an uncontrolled environment.
Right.
Now you have these trainers coming on the field and our own experience, and we jokingly refer to what they have in their bags, kit bags, as magic spray, the magic sponge.
Sure.
You have two men running on the field with little more than that magic sponge and save a man's life in the most uncontrolled of environments that you can ask for. What they did is simply beyond me and beyond the calling of any physio you would think. And while we talk about and discuss UEFA's decision, the result, let's pay a special tribute to the job that these men did in the most difficult of circumstances. That is simply phenomenal, that allows us to go on and talk about those aspects.
They saved his life.
Without question. Yeah. And we could sit here and talk about them for an hour and still won't do the job that they did justice.
You know, we sit here, this is a football programme. We talk about games and we talk about chances and why did he miss that chance and why didn't he score, and we talk about composure and we talk about making the right decision. Well, these guys had one chance to make the right decision and they absolutely did.
Yes.
Unbelievable.
And everyone has an opinion. If it had gone wrong, what, they should have done it this way or they should have done that. And then all of a sudden, all they're doing is trying to save this man and everyone's going to start throwing stones. Jürgen?
Yeah, I think Shaka is spot on. You know, I mean, the medical staff comes in there, is completely overwhelmed by the situation, and that's what they need to do. And they did it, and they're angels, simply angels. You've got to give them so much respect under these extreme stress situations to handle something like that. And and to save Christian Eriksen. And now we can talk up and down, obviously, if they should have played, should have not played, if it's tomorrow a better day. I mean, what the players, this coaching staffs are going through already since 1.5 years with COVID is just extremely, extremely stressful. What they went through today is you cannot even describe it, you know, the emotions of the teammates and, and the families and all that stuff. But obviously, you know, the UEFA tried to do their part, you know, they consolidated with both federations. I think at the end of the day, it's even if it's the head of the federations that make those decisions and with UEFA, it's not, I don't think it's the coaching staff at the end. So they made the decision to go on and play the game. The game is played. I think overall, you know, if kind of the sun goes down tonight, I think everybody is just relieved. Everybody is just happy. Even if you lost your first European championship game, if you are now Denmark, but everybody is relieved. Christian is with us, and that's what really matters. So they're going to regroup now, Denmark. They will give it the next shot with the second game. They're still in the tournament. They will try to talk soccer as much as they can now. And obviously they have always Christian in their mind and in minds and in their prayers. So I think it's extremely stressful what these people going through right now. But you got to give the medical staff, as Shaka said, you got to give them so much credit. They are angels.
And of course, we were living through the emotions and you could see them on our screens with the fans in the stadium. And then it was a nice touch, wasn't it, when everything, well, we heard that Eriksen was going to be okay. Nice touch from the Finland and the Danish fans. You kind of hope, Shaq, this will just unite football a little bit.
Yeah, without question, it did. And again, it puts things into perspective. As much as we talk about this game, as much emotion that this game evokes in all of us for different reasons, as much as we talk about rivalries and at times animosity between groups of fans, you see these two sets of fans and how they rally around a fallen player. And the Finnish fans joining in with the Danes in support of a Danish player, the Danish star. It speaks to the power of this game and the good that this game can continue to do, the good that this game invokes in all of us. And it was fantastic. As difficult as it was to witness Eriksen going down and the moments after, knowing that he was alive and seeing the response of the fans, made witnessing that just made you recognize a different aspect to this game and what this game really is truly about.
Gab, your last words on this?
I'm with Jürgen. I think, you know, debating today, tomorrow, I think the big takeaway is that Christian Eriksen's still with us. I think you're right. We're right to celebrate the paramedics. I mean, we also remember that there's paramedics all over the world who do this every day. These guys did it on TV, but these really are, as Jürgen said, angels. These are people who work really hard, and they save lives daily. And maybe it'll help us appreciate them a bit more. And I think ultimately the reason this really resonated with so many of us is that, you know, whether you're born rich or poor, whether you've got all sorts of privilege or you don't, the one thing which unites us all as humans is our own mortality. And when you were confronted with it the way Eriksen was today, and then you stay with us, I think that's a cause for all of us to feel a part of it and all of us to celebrate.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's L-E-C-T-R-I-C-E-bikes.com.
Feels weird, but as Stevie says, this is a sports show. As we look ahead to the other action that took place today, Belgium kicking off their campaign at home against Russia, and they'd open the scoring after just 10 minutes. Romelu Lukaku making it 1-0. Of course, Lukaku and Christian Eriksen, teammates at Inter Milan. The goal given as the defender made an attempt at the ball and therefore plays Lukaku onside. He would make it 1-0. Many thought Belgium would win this game easily, and that's pretty much how it happened. As with 15 minutes to go in the first half, it's 2-0, Jack.
Yeah, and goalkeeper makes an absolute mess of the cross here. Just helps it into the path and easily tidied up.
It was a really non-event, the second half. Just Lukaku making it 3 late on, Don.
It was too easy for them. Meunier got the goal and came off the bench and then got an assist and a couple of goals from Lukaku. He'll fancy himself for the golden boots. A lovely little finish on his weaker right foot. And it was a professional performance from Belgium. Job done. It was a little bit easy for them. I didn't think the Russians at all really posed any sort of problems to Belgium. So, comfortable win, top the group.
This is what Lukaku had to say after the game.
Well, I'm really happy with the win, but for me it was difficult today to play because my mind was with my teammate Christian. I hope he's healthy and, you know, I dedicate this performance to him.
Yeah. How big was the impact for the team that when you received the news?
Yeah, I cried a lot because I was scared, obviously. You know, we lived strong moments together for a year and a half. I spent more time with him than with my family. So, you know, my thoughts was with him, his girlfriend, his two kids and his family. Yeah.
That's it. We talk about the human aspect once again, Shaq, of it all.
Yeah, it is. And obviously on the back of everybody's mind, as Romelu Lukaku pointed out, Christian Eriksen, a player that he knows so well, he considers a friend, given their time they spent together in Milan. And for him, as much as anyone involved in this tournament, a huge sense of relief to get the news that Christian was alive and stable, and he just able to then refocus that energy, refocus that kind of sympathy around a fallen teammate into a match-winning performance.
Of course, it's testament to the form that he has shown since he left Manchester United. Of course, a key figure in Inter Milan winning Serie A, topping the table under Antonio Conte, and his record all around. You take a look at his record as well for Belgium as well. 62 goals in 94 games. Jürgen, quite a testament to his character, I suppose, that he can go out and put in that sort of performance today.
Yeah, absolutely. Tremendous performance by Lukaku and the Belgium team, but I have to say I was very, very disappointed by the Russian performance. It's just a shadow of what they were, you know, 3 years ago in Russia at the World Cup. At their home World Cup, they were energetic, they were courageous, they really gave it a go, and what they showed today was no spirit, no fight, no resilience in the Russian squad. So it was an easy run for Belgium, and Belgium proved it. I mean, they proved it that they belong to the favorites to win this Euro 2020. Lukaku became a leader throughout the last 2 years. You know, with his time at Inter Milan, he matured into a leader, into all-rounded, 100% number nine, you know, to perfection. He knows where the ball will drop. He has a nose for his box, and he speculates at the right time. He makes his runs like in the second goal. You know, he started his run early. Meunier played it perfectly in there. So it's very impressive, and he might have a good chance to win the Golden Boot.
Yeah, indeed. Don will tell us that he predicted him to be the top goal scorer. Belgium then at top of Group B alongside Finland. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Meanwhile, Wales-Switzerland feels like 3 days ago, really, but it was, in fact, today. Of course, the other game in Group A, in the end, it finishes Wales 1, Switzerland 1. The spoils shared there, but no doubt about it, Stevie. Wales very much the happier of the two sides with that result.
Well, when you put in a performance that Wales did and you come away with something, they'll be absolutely delighted because they can only get better. Listen, had they lost 2, 3 or 4, which they probably deserved to, then you're looking at pretty much them being out. Now, they just need one performance. Yeah. One great performance and win the game and get themselves 4 points. Because I think 4 points is going to put you into the next stages.
They'll be banking, won't they, Wales? They'll be banking on Italy beating Switzerland.
Absolutely.
And they can beat Turkey.
Absolutely.
But they've got to play with a little bit more confidence.
Yeah,
but everything was so tight in
it
that
was,
first
half. Yeah, but first game in, Dan, you're going to be petrified. You're not just going to come out the blocks and go, right, we're going to beat these. This should be a walk in the park. Switzerland are a decent side. They won't go deep into the tournament, but they give Wales a little bit of a scare, and Mbola led the line well. And as Stevie said, you don't play well. They started quite well. I thought the first 15-20 minutes they were okay. Then they had a little wobble. Then they went behind and showed a bit of spirit. But when you don't put in a good performance and you come away, you draw 1-1, you think we've got a chance because they'll beat Turkey. Turkey will probably finish bottom of the group. Wales are still in this.
Don't start making predictions of your history.
It's a question, not are they, can they actually put a performance in?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, that's the truth.
They are as poor as they played today and drew 1-1.
But is that them? You know, what we saw today, is that them?
No,
that's the thing we don't know.
I think they're better than that.
Because I don't remember seeing a Wales side playing particularly great since maybe the last Euros.
I think they're better than what they showed today.
The thing is, when Wales haven't played well, they've been able to call on their big-name players, like Gareth Bale or Daniel James, to do something, give us something. But all game long, neither of those really stepped up. And it was, to your point, Steve, a really poor Welsh performance that... Right now, I'm not that confident about their prospects.
Well, three more matches, of course, for you tomorrow. And what a way to start the day. England taking on Croatia. That's 8:30 Eastern on ESPN, followed by Austria against North Macedonia. Then it's the Netherlands against Ukraine.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Let's start off by focusing on that game at Wembley, shall we? A lot of discussion about how far England can go in this tournament. Obviously, they are in a good position to get out of the group, considering they're in the same group as Scotland and the Czech Republic.
Steady
on.
What?
Yeah.
Well, Scotland being in a group got to do it.
Well, I'm just saying that you were definitely...
Got to see we're Wills.
What have they got? What is their level? Gab, what's the level of expectation in and around England regarding how far they can go in this tournament?
Well, look, I think we're seeing some of the same pattern that we always see with England, where all of a sudden, you know, they look around to the other teams in Europe and say, yeah, they're good, but, yeah, they're good, but, yeah, they're good, but. And they say, hey, we can win this. And look, to be fair, I mean, England have a phenomenal group of young players in certain positions. And so there's every right to be excited. I personally think the fact that Gareth Southgate, through no fault of his own, hasn't been able to put out something, put out his best 11 or even try to build the chemistry in the last two friendlies, because Chelsea and City got to the Champions League finals. He didn't have those players. The fact that we're still not quite sure what his 11 will look like, whether it's three at the back, four at the back, I think that doesn't help at all. And I think Croatia would love to put another one over them.
Well, let's talk about the starting 11. I asked you for the one that you thought Gareth Southgate was going to give me. Don, you said, I haven't got a crystal ball, Dan, you idiot. And I said, well, look, can you just give me one, please?
Well, that's the best I could come up with. I don't think I'll be too far away. I think it will be three at the back. I don't think Gareth will play a four. And I've gone for Tyrone Mings because of the balance on the left-hand side with Chilwell. Stones and Walker. I've got Reece James as a right wing-back. Declan Rice in the middle of the park. And the top end of the pitch is just massively open for debate. There's so many great players that you can choose from, and you know, Grealish could come into that conversation. Jadon Sancho could come into that conversation as well. Jude Bellingham might play in the middle of the park. But I've got a feeling I won't be too far away with that.
Jürgen, you take a look at that side, and even as an Englishman, I look at other teams in this tournament, and there isn't the spine there that you would want, that you feel that needs to be solid if they're going to go all the way.
I think they definitely have a very strong spine, as you saw the names right now. The question is just, are they fine-tuned? Are they in a rhythm? Are they kind of knowing each other inside out on the field? And they couldn't do that in the previous friendly games because, obviously, of the European Cup finals. And so Gareth Southgate, he had to mix it up a bit for these two preparation friendlies. So that's a big question. And then you have Croatia, who always plays their best 11, no matter what. They, whatever game they play, if it's a qualifier game or a friendly game, they start with their best 11. And they're extremely hungry when it gets down to tournaments. You know, they had their up and down since Russia, obviously. And they had also their negative moments. But I think they're going to be sharp. It's going to be a very, very exciting match at Wembley tomorrow. And for me, England has to top, obviously, Russia 2018. Mm-hmm. They got into the semi-final, so the goal has to be getting in the final, because the final, semi-final and final are going to be played in at Wembley, and this is huge. So there's no bigger chance than now for England to win the European Championship. And that, with not having had the chance to play a starting 11 in the previous games, it's not that easy.
Let's take a look at some predictions, shall we? The boys have got... Steve, you've gone for an England win?
Yeah.
Why?
Because I think they'll win. You asked me who I thought would win, what the score would be.
No, well, I know. You never want England to win anything.
OK, let me put it this way. My head says 2-0 to England. My heart is praying that Croatia come out and battle them. How's that? Is that clear enough for you?
But Croatia have got a good record against England, haven't they, in big tournaments?
Well, they have, but I just look at what England have got going forward against what Croatia have going forward.
Right.
Yes, they've got players in the middle of the park, they can keep the ball. But going forward, who's scoring all the goals? You know, Perisic has been the sort of mainstay of a front three, and then it's two others.
Right.
You look at what England's got going forward, my goodness, it's an embarrassment of riches. And that's why I think England will win the game.
Well, of course, we'll be reflecting on that game on the next edition of the show. We'll also be looking back at the Dutch and their opener as they take on Ukraine. It hasn't been exactly the perfect month of preparation for Frank de Boer. A lot of people questioning his tactics, in particular, five at the back. That was epitomised by somebody. Who on earth would pay for a plane anyway? But there we go. Frank de Boer, 4-3-3. Jürgen still with us. And let's welcome, shall we, Frank de Boer's biggest critic, Julien Laurent, joins us as well. Julien, the obvious question is, were you the one flying that plane?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I was very happy to pay for the plane, to fly over the training ground, to remind Frank de Boer once again that what he's doing is completely stupid. And I hope for his own sake now that he's going to win tomorrow, that it's going to start well for him, the tournament, in that formation. Because otherwise, you can just imagine, not here on our show, not just here on our show, but I think everywhere else, you can just imagine the critics that are going to come down on him if they don't play well and don't win against Ukraine tomorrow.
Jürgen, if you had a plane flew over saying, take Landon Donovan to the World Cup, would that have changed your mind?
almost.
Does that influence coaches at all?
I find this... Oh, no, obviously not, you know, but I think it's really funny. I mean, it's nice to see something like that. And now, does it change his mind? No, it won't, you know, but at the end of the day, we discussed it a couple of times. The system doesn't really matter if he plays a 4-3-3 or a 3-4-3 or, you know, whatever you want to call it. You know, he has to field the 11 guys that really badly want to win this European Championship, because the players that Holland has since generations is always outstanding. So they have enough quality in this group of players that can make a huge difference and can make they can play a great tournament and they can win it, you know. It's down to the chemistry within that group. It's down to if they sort things out themselves, you know. I mean, you can always have a disagreement with your manager, with your coach. At the end of the day, you are the player. You decide on the field, you know, how you want to shift, how you want to move, how aggressive you are. If you want to dribble, shoot, or pass, you know, it's all your decision. You know, the coach is then only outside, and he can scream as much as he wants to. They won't listen. I mean, they will do their own thing. And so if they have character, if they have drive, if they're hungry enough, they can win the Euros.
Does that make sense to you, Stevie?
The only bit that doesn't make sense is again, I'm going to go back to where the goals are coming from. It seems that going forward, if Depay's on his game, then Netherlands can win some games. But if he's not, I don't know where the goals are coming from. You know, they're pretty decent at the back. They've got a great midfield. De Jong, Ronaldo, De Roon, that's a good midfield. But where's the goals coming from?
You've gone for 1-1. Meanwhile, Don, you've gone for a 1-0.
I have, just. Maybe Vikos might be the man to try and lead them, but I don't think they'll... There's something about this Dutch side I can't get a handle on.
Xhaka loves Frank de Boer. 3-0.
I can't get a handle on them.
No problem. Take that, Jules.
Listen, the thing is with the Dutch, they are as likely to win this thing as they are to crash out in the first round. That's just who they are.
You can't get a handle on them.
Coming into this one, at least the Dutch in their last seven have scored multiple goals in their last seven games. So I'm leaning on that very talented midfield that Steve references to come good on the day against Ukraine.
Meanwhile, there is one more game. Austria taking on North Macedonia. No one sees an upset at all. Austria go into the game as...
Hold on, what's the upset?
Well, that North Macedonia would win. That would be an upset.
Good shade. Have you seen them playing?
Look at the odds.
It'd be Germany, though.
Upset.
All behave.
Chipping in. Right, just going to move on nicely. You've got to put your big old size 14s in. We'll, of course, be looking back at that game and those other two matches on the next edition of ESPN FC. We'll be live on ESPN Plus at 6 p.m. Eastern.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Meanwhile, the Copa America will start. Tim Vickery has broken down everything that has gone on in what has been quite the soap opera over the last month. For more on this, shall we? Jules is still with us. Gab Marcotti joins us as well. Boys, Jules, I'm going to start with you. What is the likelihood, in your opinion, that this tournament will actually be completed?
No one knows, Dan. That's the thing. Personally, I don't think it should have even started. I don't think this Copa America, and I know it was obviously postponed from last summer, exactly like the Euros, but maybe this was the one time that it should not have been played, full stop. Already, he should have been played in Argentina and Colombia. First, Colombia said we can't host it. Then Argentina said we can't host it either. Then he went to Brazil. Even the Brazilian players themselves didn't want it to be played in their own country because of the current situation in terms of COVID. I mean, it was a mess from the beginning, and now the latest news with Venezuela, the Venezuela stuff, and everything is just so discouraging, really, that you even wonder, like you said, if it will go to an end, if we will have, what kind of games we will have, what kind of tournament we will have, who will play in it. And I just don't think it's good. And I think there's a time where football is not the priority. And again, we saw it today with Christian Eriksen. And you should be very careful of what you do. You can't always play football and put people at risk, because it doesn't work like this.
Jules mentioned the Venezuela news. Reports that 13 players have tested positive for COVID within the camp. Gab, who is driving this to continue?
So I think it's actually 13 people in the Venezuelan delegation. It's at least five players, including Rincon, the midfielder. But in terms of who's driving it, I mean, I don't want to sound like a cynic here, but obviously CONMEBOL have bills to pay like everybody else. I think that is a big one. TV rights have been sold. You know, you can't postpone it another 6 months, or sorry, another 12 months. I think there's a lot of pressure there. I think there's some politics involved as well. Jair Bolsonaro, the Brazilian president, even though it's not his call, he's very big on showing how, despite COVID, things can function properly in his country. So I think these are really the elements that are really pushing it. You know, when the decision was made not to hold it in Argentina because of the COVID situation, which incidentally, you know, it's not like it's far worse than in Brazil, on the contrary. You know, some parties of the Argentine FA said, well, great, we'll show you. We can't play it at home. We'll just go to Brazil and win it there. And obviously it's Messi's chance to win his first senior trophy. So I think there's a lot of factors there. But otherwise, I'm with Jules. You know, there are situations where, you know, you have to ask yourself at what point, you know, at what point does it stop being worth it? And you just pray that this can go over without a hitch and making sure everybody's safe.
Thank you very much, gents, as always. The Gab and Jules podcast then available twice a week. Our podcast available every single day. Take that. I know you listen to it religiously, absolutely, don't you, Dom, when you're back in England?
Every day.
Plenty of bonus material as well for you, yep, to entertain.
Yeah.
Have you ever listened to a podcast?
Podcast?
Yes.
What's up?
Yeah. It's not even joking. That's it. Thank you very much to Jürgen, to Gab, to Jules, and to everyone here in the studio. We'll, of course, be back tomorrow for more to reflect on England against Croatia and the Dutch take on the Ukraine.